If I'm not mistaken, John, your mention of not getting high school students in New Hampshire to secede was an oblique reference to the Free State Project. And yes, I moved to New Hampshire with the Free State Project, and many of you should too. It's working. I'm speaking in defense of fusionism as an intellectual idea, or as my co-author on this, William Ruger, and I prefer to call it, virtue libertarianism. I'm not going to say anything about political strategy or intellectual history, and I don't necessarily endorse any kind of political alliance between conservatives and libertarians. Instead, I'm trying to defend the proposition that we have important moral duties that are not duties of justice. Broadly speaking, there are two camps that would reject this thesis. One has a narrow view of moral duties, and the other a broad one. First, libertine libertarians hold that all moral duties have only to do with the use of physical force and fraud. Second, paternalists hold that there are many moral duties to the self that may also be enforced. I'm going to take each of these in turn. First, I will argue that libertarians are logically committed to endorsing moral duties that go beyond merely respecting the rights of others. Then I will argue contra paternalism, that moral obligations that do not have to do with respecting others' rights ought not be enforced in law. Libertarians of all sorts endorse strong moral duties not to violate the rights of other persons. Murder, theft, and fraud are clear examples of rights violations that we have duties not to perform, duties that may be enforced against us by law if necessary. What characteristic of human beings generates our rights to be treated in this way? After all, libertarians would not say that it would be morally impermissible to assault a rock. And only the most confused and extreme animal rights partisans would say that non-human animals enjoy exactly the same rights as humans, including presumably the right to make contracts, to own property, and so on. Humans enjoy rights that mere objects and non-human organisms do not. We deserve to be treated in certain ways. Why? There are multiple candidates for a characteristic that would generate that kind of value in human beings. The most plausible probably has something to do with our potential for understanding moral obligations, for empathy, and for reasoning in the broadest sense. Possessing those faculties distinguishes persons from non-persons. Persons deserve the highest moral respect. Non-persons may have moral value, but they do not enjoy respect. For instance, the welfare of a cow matters, morally speaking. It would be despicably wrong of me to torture a cow for no reason at all. But a cow is not an end in itself, in Kantian terms. There's nothing wrong with buying and selling cows or keeping a cow on a property against its will, so long as it is decently kept. And if a human were starving, at the very least, it would be permissible for her to kill and eat the cow, so long as she does it with reasonable attention to minimizing the cow's suffering. If our understanding of morality, our empathy and our rationality, our personhood, make us deserving of respect, then do we need to respect those characteristics in ourselves? I do not see how one can avoid the conclusion. I must not violate your rights because you deserve respect on account of your personhood. I must not violate my own dignity by degrading my own personhood, my own basis of respect. It would be odd indeed to claim that the only moral duties persons owe each other are to respect their rights, but not to respect the very basis of those rights. I can destroy or impair my own personhood, most obviously through wanton suicide, self-mutilation, or perpetually intoxicating myself. If my personhood deserves my respect, then I have a duty not to do those things, at the very least, even though they violate no one's rights. Going further, brutalizing my own character by shutting myself off from the civilizing and uplifting influences of friendship, or by immersing myself in purely hedonistic pursuits or in grossly violent and dehumanizing media, would also disrespect my personhood and be wrong. Similarly, I have duties to others that go beyond merely respecting their rights. Rudeness and indecency toward others may not violate their rights, but it suggests that I do not value their personhood, that I do not see them as anything more than tools to my own ends. failing to help those in dire need who cross my path suggests a lack of empathy that undermines the moral character. Assisting others in degrading their own personhood is also wrong. I have a duty to help others in need and to treat them with respect, and thus by implication to develop the kind of character that makes me desire to help others in need and treat them with respect. Indeed, any activity that tends, on balance, to erode our capacities for self-control and for empathy is to be avoided. If there are any moral obligations at all, then they also generate secondary obligations to develop the kind of character that makes us likely to successfully discharge the primary set of obligations. Therefore, libertine libertarianism, the view that duties not to invade other persons or property exhaust our moral duties, is incoherent. It demands simultaneously that we respect others' rights because of their personhood, but that we have no need to respect that very personhood, either in ourselves or in others. Libertine libertarians should instead be either moral nihilists, rejecting all moral duties, a false and dangerous view, but a coherent one, or virtue libertarians. Paternalism, which I define here as the view that some duties toward the self may be permissibly enforced, is also self-undermining. The argument is parallel to that against libertine libertarianism. If humans are so valuable that their moral duties to themselves must be enforced, what is the source of that value? Let's call it personhood. To coerce people for their own good is to disrespect their personhood. First, paternalism denies humans moral equality. When I force you not to harm yourself against your settled intention, I have set myself up as a kind of moral god whose right it is to override your schedule of values with my own. Paternalism implicitly denies its victims full humanity. Because they are choosing wrongly, they will not be allowed to choose. Now, sometimes it is appropriate to deny the moral equality of human beings. Children lack the full rational capacities, and to aid in their development of those capacities, they may be paternalistically restrained if necessary. The insane also lack the full capacities for moral choice. For instance, it may be permissible to restrain a deeply mentally ill individual from committing suicide, at least until the episode of mental turbulence has passed and the person can make her real intentions known. But to coercively restrain sane adults from making their own choices that do not violate anyone else's rights is to deny their capacity for choice and self-determination. It is to claim alien ownership over their lives and bodies. Second, freedom is a precondition for true virtue. Doing the right thing simply because one fears punishment does not generate any virtue, which is a condition of the will and not merely the outward form of an action. Going further, evidence shows that freedom actually enhances its possessor's virtue. According to psychologists' work on internal locus of control, feeling in control of one's own destiny, that the outcomes of one's actions depend on what one does rather than on events outside one's control, that internal locus of control has all kinds of desirable consequences. Those with an internal locus of control take responsibility for their actions. They work harder to achieve what they want. They tend to be happier, healthier, and more financially successful. Tellingly, relatively free market societies boast citizens with higher internal locus of control compared to relatively state-controlled societies. Experimental evidence has even shown that showing people essays about free will, pro or con, affects their internal locus of control and their performance on subsequent tasks. We should not be free to make bad choices that violate others' rights. To allow those choices would actually be to limit choices, the choices of those whose rights are violated. So the law of equal freedom, as Herbert Spencer called it, appropriately demands that each individual should enjoy the maximum freedom consistent with the like freedom of every other individual. Now, some paternalists might claim that there are some nonviolent acts that cause violent acts and may be restrained for that reason. Imagine that you could take a drug that would, with 100% certainty, cause you to go on a murderous rampage. Could you be restrained from taking that drug? Should we do that? Of course. And for the same reason, we can limit extreme risks imposed on others through actions such as drunk driving. But as an empirical matter, the drugs that people actually enjoy taking are nothing like that. We can say more or less the same about other vices, pornography, watching violent movies, and so on. It is plausible that some of these activities raise the risks of violent behavior for some individuals by an unknown but fairly modest amount. It is not plausible that, like drunk driving, they dramatically raise the risks of violence for just about everyone engaging in the activity. To advocate getting the state involved in regulating drugs, pornography, movies, or video games because of a possible slight rise in the risk of violence from a small minority of the consumers of these things is to endorse the concept of pre-crime, that we may restrain or punish individuals who haven't actually committed crimes just because we think they might commit one. It's ultimately a totalitarian impulse. If we believe in individual moral responsibility, then we must also believe in individuals' freedom to choose over their own destinies, even if those choices are sometimes wrong. There is indeed a limited right to do wrong. It only sounds strange in the English language because we use the word right simultaneously as an adjective to mean morally permissible and as a noun to mean others' duty of justice to allow or provide one something. There is absolutely no conceptual problem with the statement that we have a duty of justice to allow people to make some wrong choices. In other words, that they have a right to make those wrong choices. Many paternalists would recoil from the notion that they could go around imposing paternalist restrictions vigilante style, even as they endorse state action in those areas. But this is strange. After all, when it comes to acts like stealing or murder, we think that just as it is appropriate for the state to get involved to punish those things, it is appropriate for an individual to use violence if necessary in self-defense. But even paternalists wouldn't say that it's morally permissible for me to go around my neighborhood into my neighbor's homes, drag the drug users out, and lock them in cages in my basement. Yet they defend the state doing more or less the same thing. The state is simply a group of human beings, and it doesn't have any rights that citizens haven't delegated to them. One can never alienate one's own right to life or liberty. I may not sell myself into slavery. But if I may not sell myself into slavery, I also may not consent to a social contract that would imprison me, take away my liberty, for acts that violate no one's rights. Any such contract is invalid and unenforceable. Imagine that there is a university that has all its new staff and students sign a contract agreeing to be locked in a dungeon if they engage in some activity that the university considers to be a vice, say, having sex outside marriage. Should such a contract be enforced? Would it be okay for the university to imprison fornicators in its dungeon? Presumably not. Similarly, no state can acquire a right to imprison people for victimless vices, even if somehow the citizens unanimously decided to give their state such a right. At most, a valid social contract, which we don't actually have, but that's another story, at most, a valid social contract would permit the state to impose financial penalties on violators. To sum up, paternalistic social conservatives need to give up the idea that more prisons and SWAT raids are the way to a more virtuous society. To the contrary, virtue requires libertarian freedom. We must be libertarians on the role of the state and virtue ethicists on the content of our moral obligations. Thank you.